welcome once again to another Public Forum Day on WAVN Radio. We, as usual, extend the invitation to you, our audience, to join us by giving us a call at 439-1220-549-6363. As we talk with a very good friend of all of us, of WAVN, Calvin Rustrum, known to us as Cal.
Right.
How are you, Cal Rustrum, and welcome back.
Fine, Ed.
Certainly a pleasure having you back with us.
Seems like home here.
If anybody along the way would like to give us a call, please do that. We'll get your question right away and get an answer. Cal is an author. He has authored, I've lost track, I don't think you probably have, Cal, but a great many books. How many?
We're working on the 10th one now.
10th? Wonderful. And the most latest, your latest book?
The latest book is Once Upon a Wilderness. Now we go back to the early days, early part of the century, and then we kind of get a resume of what the wilderness is like today, and we have the temerity to try to project ourselves into the future. I don't know what it's going to be, but I can presume anyway.
That can get to be a wilderness too, can't it, really? Thinking about it. I remember, though, interviewing you in 1961. And by the way, I think we should point out the fact that most of your books are about the outdoors and how to get along out there. In 61, we talked about the Wilderness Cabin, and now I understand this book has recently been revised, and it's in a hardcover and paperback, and also a big increase in demand. A real sudden increase. How do you account for a substantial increase in the Wilderness Cabin interest? And matter of fact, that had to be in 61 that we talked about it.
Yes, that's. I think this was when it was first published. Ed, I would imagine that there's a whole change in the tempo of life right now. Probably not as apparent as it actually is. In other words, people are beginning to wonder if values aren't more important than price. They've been living in a kind of an industrial society, and they've been probably more concerned about the material things of life than they have in some of the elemental and natural things in life. And I'm beginning to believe that we're going to see a gradual change from the rat race, so to speak, to a more simple, elemental form of existence.
No, I would go along with it and say that I welcome it almost. In order to keep up with it, I guess you have to keep going with it. And if it slows down, maybe I'll slow down.
Well, absolutely. In fact, I've said on occasion that that I sort of enjoy crisis. That's probably an easy little qualification. The thing is that when I see a 2-foot snowstorm over in the city, everybody comes to a screeching halt. This is a sort of crisis that I enjoy because people, they get to going and their wheels get to running too fast, and when they have to slow down for a short time, they begin to check their present lifestyle and wonder if this hasn't been too much speed, too much excitement, too much materialism, too much of everything else, and when they have to sit home and read a book because there's a snowstorm outside, to me this is delightful.
Cal, looking at the energy situation, the energy shortage that we have, do you think this causes people to think that they'll have to change their lifestyle, or is their lifestyle change forced upon them?
Well, I suppose that
without them thinking about it,
just as you said, Ed, a minute ago, that you were sort of welcome the idea of some of these things compelling you to do things, because in order to maintain our conventional position, we just have to run along with everybody else and be in gear with them, and when something of this kind comes along, this energy shortage, and creates a kind of a crisis, a kind of a slowing down, you're sort of glad to fall in with it. And I think people on the whole, not all perhaps, but a great many people are sort of glad to fall in with a change that is compelling.
Well, I don't mind taking it easy. I like to take it easy and enjoy it.
Well, I think it's absolutely necessary to take it a little bit easier because I think it's a matter of health, a matter of psychological approach to life as well as physical approach. If you're going to run the gamut of speed all the time, I think you're going to finally get yourself into a bad. You can get behind the eight ball a little bit and not know how to get out of around it.
Mm-hmm. Before the broadcast, we were talking about the wood, and you mentioned there's a great rush for wood stoves, and it has foundries back ordering. Is this due to the fuel shortage too? Yeah, that's
a strange thing, Ed. The foundries in Maine who were making cast iron stoves, people thought, well, here's a horse and buggy type of business, and the old pot-bellied stove, you could buy them for an antique and so forth, and the old cast iron stoves, so-called box stoves, it was more or less of an antique, but there were people who wanted them. Now they have enlarged their plant and they cannot keep up. For example, and there's another stove that's very much in demand, and that's the what they call the Franklin fireplace stove.
Right.
You're familiar with it. I most think everybody else is, our listeners are no doubt familiar with it. But for those who aren't quite familiar with it, it's really pretty much like any ordinary cast iron stove, except that the front doors can be swung open and you have a complete open fireplace area. And it's so constructed with a smoke shelf and all this sort of thing so that it will continue as a fireplace. And then if you want to shut it up, you can. And here's a point of interest I think that our listeners should know, and I think it's already been brought to their attention, but perhaps some of them haven't, that the average fireplace where you're burning wood now to supplant oil, or at least cut down on the amount of oil, you're not cutting it down at all. That heat is going up the chimney. And on actual tests, the furnace goes on much oftener when you have the fireplace going full tilt than it does when you don't have the fireplace going full tilt. Now, there, in this Franklin fireplace stove, you can shut this up so that it is just radiating. And the reason that your furnace is going on, of course, is because you have that area about 3 feet wide and 2 feet high, not even the average one, where all this air is rushing up the chimney, and that's all warm air that's going up there, you see. And there, now, of course, you have some units that are built into fireplaces, heat-elator types, various firms that put them out. But there you get a radiation and a circulation in behind the fireplace, which helps some. But even then, unless you have that front closed, you're having some loss of heat even when your furnace is going and your fireplace is going. Now, what you can do is go to a sheet metal firm and have a couple of doors made to set in the front of the fireplace, and so that this doesn't rush up, the heat doesn't rush up the chimney. And when you do that, of course, you get the radiation off of those doors, and if you have a heat-elator type in there, you're going to definitely amplify the heat situation to your advantage.
Cal, I have a whole many questions. One of them being, is there a problem in burning wood? I know we still have them. As soon as the cold snap comes along, somebody has a chimney fire.
Yeah, the difficulty, of course, is that people don't, one of the things from a hazard standpoint is they don't clean their chimneys. And up north at our cabin where we're burning wood all the time, we get up on the roof there with a long pole and a couple of balsam boughs tied to the end of the pole, and we just clean out the chimney very frequently. If you don't, you're liable to have a soot fire. It'll keep building up there. It'll build up there until it's an inch thick in the pipe, and it'll not only only cause you a possible fire hazard, but your draft is going to be cut down so that you aren't going to get the benefit of a free, clean draft. Now, I made a mistake here up north on one occasion, and I used what they call a soot remover. But actually, what it is something that will make the soot combustible. And when it's combustible, of course, it'll burn out. If there's a small amount in the chimney, it'll just burn the soot out, and you've got a clean chimney again. But if you've got an inch of soot in there, and you make it more combustible, now you're in trouble, you see.
That's a fact. Well, how about dry wood? And here we go with a whole bunch of questions. People use dry wood, green wood, soft wood, hard wood. I've heard apple tree is the best wood you can get. I don't know.
If you want a flame, an active flame, of course, one of the best woods that you can get for an active flame are soft woods, of course. And but the hard maple even will make a beautiful flame. But the difficulty is there, you're burning something that's very precious that you need for making flooring and so forth. Now, everybody thinks they have to have dry wood in a stove. Now, there are going to be a great many stoves used, just ordinary stoves to help the heat situation along. Now they're going to look for dry wood, and because it'll burn. But if they start a fire with dry wood and get a good bed going, then they can begin to burn green wood at the same time. For example, birch, which is still fairly common and can be had, will burn. Once you get a good fire going with dry wood, you can burn green birch and continue burning it. But of course, the logical way to do it is to in order to get dry wood, is to go into the forest and cut the stuff that's standing dry. The stuff that's lying down usually is so rotten that it is just punk and it doesn't offer any fuel value. But if you go into the forest and get the stuff that's standing, that has died and is still on the stump, then of course you usually tell by hitting it. If it's got a good resinous sound, then it's usually pretty good wood. But the thing, if you want to year after year. Now, this is not a temporary thing, this fuel situation, and I think we should probably begin to prepare for it. Go and buy next year's wood today and let it dry for a year. In other words, buy it green and let it dry for a year. And in other words, burn the wood that you bought and cut last year, next year, and so on, and had this success. Otherwise, you're going to run out of dry wood in a comparatively short time.
This brings up about three more questions. How much does a guy know he's going to need? You say, buy next year's wood this year.
Well, that's...
How much do you know? How much?
That's the frightening part of this wood-burning thing. For example, up there on Seagull Lake, a friend of mine has a log cabin. He has a kitchen, a living room, and a bedroom. And in order to get through the winter with wood alone, he has to cut 14 cords.
What's a cord?
A cord is in cubic content, it's a pile that'll be 4 by 4 by 8 feet. And of course, it depends on what the wood is, but they're frequently referred to a cord as a ton also. But the hardwood, of course, would be much heavier than the softwood.
How do you go about gathering? Do you have to gather on your own property? Or?
Well, now let's just assume that these people are going to go up to their cabins. They might do this in the wintertime now to even save fuel. In fact, I'm talking to a friend of mine who's going to spend 2 weeks during the Christmas vacation
at his cabin.
This way, he said, I'm going to shut the furnace down. He says, so that just things just won't freeze in the city. And he's going up there and spend 2 weeks, and they're going to have a good time up there because Christmas is should be spent in the forest. It's a natural place to spend Christmas. And see, what is the question?
Oh, the question about gathering it. These people are going north, but would they be gathering on their own property?
Well, in the summertime, in the fall, when you'd like to be gathering, you can take two boats, for instance, and travel around the lake and just cut the dead stuff that's back in away from the shore. That's easy to bring to the waterfront. And that's the way it's gathered in the North Country, as a rule, because it's a whole lot more difficult to gather it in the wintertime. However, I noticed when I was up to Hudson's Bay here, during the winter, the Indians only gather about 3 days' fuel supply at a time, and they don't worry about the future like we do. But of course, you can haul it if you've got a snowmobile and a trailer, you can haul it that way, mm-hmm. and you can haul it by toboggan, of course, if you would in the winter time. But it's a messy job to have to dig it out of the snow and handle it that way. I'd rather gather the wood in the fall for next year, and if you have to have some right away, of course, you'll gather dry wood.
So, in other words, it's available.
The government is now opening up
land.
They're opening up areas where you can cut the dry wood. In other words, they used to think in terms of, especially in this Spear Forest area, that they just leave the stuff lie there and go into humus. Of course, it just builds up the soil and
mm-hmm. must be some rich soil.
But the thing is that they will allow you to cut now, and this will probably get more generous all the time as to where they can get it.
Cal, we'll be back in just a moment to continue our discussion. And should any of our listeners have a question, and I think we may have one on the line now, we'll be right with you. But just give us a call at 439-1220-549-6363.
Does your house suffer from heat leaks? You know those places where the cold gets in and expensive heat gets out. If it does, now is the time to plug them up. As you may know, inadequate insulation in buildings is the biggest cause of needless energy waste. So try a few of these easy ways to conserve fuel and keep your heating bill down, too. Check your attic insulation to see if it has settled over the years. If the ceiling joists are exposed, add enough insulation to cover them up. Check around doors and windows. You should caulk any cracks around the frames and weather strip around doors and windows. Be sure you have tight-fitting storm windows and doors. And don't forget to check your furnace filter at least once a month during the cold season to be sure it's clean. Let's all start plugging those heat leaks before it gets any colder. You'll save heating fuel and money. Not only that, but you'll be a lot more comfortable on cold winter nights. Northern States Power Company reminds you, saving energy makes sense.
Well, we have a listener on the line, Cal. Go right ahead.
Hello, this is Calvin Rutstrom speaking.
Yes, I would like to know what they call a rick, you know, for how many footies or inch they go by.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, they usually refer to this as the amount of wood they can get in a certain carrier, but you better not be fooled by that, because you better see that there's a cubic contents. There's some of these old terms that they just used a rick was a load of a certain kind, but now that can have a very modified amount, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't depend too much on it.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
We're at 439-1220-549-6363, and our guest today is Cal Rutstrom, author of many books. And today we're talking about not only his newest, but it's interesting that we should be talking about stoves and wood. I really must admit that I never thought that we would be talking about something such as this coming back into vogue, if you would follow me. You know, we always look ahead at atomic energy and whatnot. And that's what I thought would be our next step. Cal Rutstrom, you were saying something about security and what now seems to be more than financial security. What did you have in mind?
Well, I think it's probably pretty apparent to everybody what I had in mind. That something nearly everybody has in mind affluence or a lot of money is not going to buy more gasoline, or it's not going to produce more gasoline for individual use. And now we're getting around to a point where we're going to look at security as probably a matter of resources. And this is not only of oil. If oil is needed to keep the farmers going, if it's going to be needed to run the tractor so we get food, and so on and so forth, you can go down through all of the ramifications of life now, and you're going to find that we have to begin to think in terms of values instead of what it was a time when the dollar bought everything, and now the man with a lot of money, he might go to the black market and buy his gasoline at three or four times the average person have to pay for it, but I'm sure this program isn't a program for scoundrels. In other words, the rich man has got to abide by the rules as well as the poor man or in the middle income person. And this thing of security now is not a question of how big your bank account is, but how well you are preparing and living your life from the standpoint of concern for every ramification of life, whether it's food, clothing, shelter, anything. And so I think we're going to have to look at security in an entirely different way. I suppose you could burn $5 bills and keep warm, but
if you had them.
But it isn't going to produce any more gasoline unless we can do it by some means that we don't know about right now.
Given enough time, I don't know if this is some famous quote here, Cal, but given enough time, it seems as if time itself equalizes things and brings it back. I don't know, it's a great equalizer, maybe.
Cyclical, probably. You know, it kind of goes around on a cycle, and it probably will... maybe we'll get so that we're going to adopt the hoe instead of the rototiller.
Say, Cal, what your book, The Wilderness Cabin, right now, there's been, as we talked about earlier, a sudden increase in demand for the book, although it was authored in 61 by Cal Rudstrom. It's a wonderful book, full of illustration all the way through. You could build several types of cabins from this book. But what's required in the simplest type of a cabin?
Well, this is something I've been thinking about lately where the energy shortage is concerned. I think that the day has come now when if you have sufficient income or sufficient savings, you should have that number two home. And I think it would be a mistake to make a white elephant out of it. In other words, you can build a cabin up on a lake, say within an hour's drive. I'm sure you'll get gasoline enough for that. In fact, you'll probably get gasoline for a 150-mile drive. But somewhere on the lake, somewhere in the area where you're living, I think it would be wise to have a simple one-room cabin where you could possibly... even have a pump outdoors, and where you could have enough area where you could cut dry fuel if you wanted for a fire, and so on. You could modernize the cabin and have a generator there, and you can have all the modern conveniences in the cabin. But I think that have it at home, and then see what the difference is in life. Thoreau said that a person should go out into the wilderness and live in a simple cabin to see just how many necessities are truly necessities. And I think now in these coming years, when there's very apt to be an energy shortage, I believe it would be a very wise thing for people to just take off and live the simple elemental existence. This would be the security they need. For example, let's supposing that this thing got truly critical. Supposing we couldn't even produce enough energy to get food and clothing and so forth and so on, and people had to take off someplace. Well, if you had a little simple cabin someplace, all you need to do is to grubstake yourself and use the simplest clothes and enjoy yourself at great length right there. Whereas you might think that in a city where you have a big modern home, you got to maintain all of these mechanical gadgets and so forth, you could probably feel in your own mind that, well, supposing things do as the fellows go all to hell, I can go out into this little cabin and I can live there and enjoy myself. I remember back when we had this Great Depression. There were people who lost their homes in the city, and those who had a cabin out somewhere that could grubstake themselves and live for a year or two with just simply some food on their shelves, staple foods on their shelves, they had the advantage of the fellow who had to kick out from $100 to $500 a month to exist.
I assume, too, that when it was over, many of them stayed right there. They learned to like it.
Indeed, they did, or else they spend more time than usual there.
Cal, we're running up on our time as far as our program goes, but I have so many other questions, like is there any problem in a water source for a cabin, and provisions, how do you handle these?
Well, of course, this is quite a big subject, and I would, without making this a plug for my book, I think that they should look into some of these other books that I have that would cover that subject quite thoroughly.
What books would you have?
Well, for example, on the subject of how to live in the woods, how to handle foods, how to transport them, how to get them to you without their spoiling and so forth. The New Way of the Wilderness is one of the books that's, if they'd like to read something of an autobiographical nature where I'm actually doing this, Challenge of the Wilderness would be a very good book to have. And if they want a book to tell them how to live in the wilderness during the winter and during sub-zero, during the sub-zero periods, the book Paradise Below Zero would, of course, cover the subject very well. And if they like, when they once get there and they like a little more philosophy on the wilderness, they can read the last book, which is Once Upon a Wilderness. And I think they'll cover the subject quite well.
They're all excellent. I think you should start, if you're contemplating a cabin, or maybe you already have one, the wilderness cabin, it's wonderful. And this one, there's been a big upsurge in that one. I guess it takes things like the energy crisis to make people go to the library and start looking around, huh?
Yes, and by the way, they can get these, in Stillwater, they can get these books in the Valley Bookstore, but they can also go and read them in the library. I don't mean that they all have to run out and buy the books. Given the library some of them, and they had purchased others, so that I think they should be pretty well supplied up there.
Well, that's great. We really enjoy your coming in and talking with us today, Cal, as we always do, coming back and visiting with us on Waven. You are almost as if a staff member, because you were here a number of years ago as a regular program feature.
That's right. I had a kind of a commentary, which I...
Today, Cal, it would be easier.
It would be easier, I think.
Yes. But then, of course, back to tell us about his various works as Cal Redstrom, the author. And thank you again, sir.
Thank you, Ed, and allowing me to come down here. I enjoy it.
With our pleasure. Wonderful reading, ladies and gentlemen. And this, the one, as I say, The Wilderness Cabin. We thank you for being with us, and we'll be back this way again Thursday with another public forum program.